I also should add that I'm a grandmother of two, Alice and Barry. And yesterday I was at the dollar store with Alice, and we were standing in line, and now the dollar store in the mall has like five self-checkouts, four or five of them. So we decided to go over there because that's kind of fun to show her how to beep things through. So we were in line, and we started to beep our stuff, and there's a fairly big line, plus just two cashiers over at a counter serving people. And so all of a sudden the machine wasn't working right, something didn't beep right, and Alice had picked out two toys, and she was really excited to just get out in the mall and open them up and play with them. And we couldn't move any farther with these toys. And so I looked over at the cashiers, wondering if one of them was going to come over and help us because my red light was on. And we stood there for 10 minutes waiting for someone to help us. And I was actually really impressed with how patient Alice was, since she's only 3 years old. So you got to picture her with blonde hair down to here with ringlets. You know, she's got a pair of rubber boots on and her Mickey Mouse t-shirt. And we waited and we kind of chatted, and the people in line could all see us. And all of a sudden, she looks over at the cashier. She goes, "Excuse me, can we get some help over here?" And I just kind of looked at her like, I was like, "It's okay, Alice, they're busy. We'll just wait a couple more minutes." So we waited about 30 more seconds, maybe a minute, and she goes, "Excuse me, can we get some help over here?" By now, the elderly gentleman next in line is laughing really hard that this little girl can command the world. And I don't know if lately you've been feeling like that towards God. You know, "Excuse me, God, do you see me over here? Can I get some help?" And so if you've been praying recently that prayer to God, I'm hoping that today, with what the message of hope I'm going to bring you today, is an answer to your prayers. That God will hear you today, and he's going to bring you the hope that you need and the help that you need. But let's open in prayer first before we read Psalm 130. Heavenly Father, we thank you, Lord, for your presence here among us today. And we just ask that your Holy Spirit is here, Father, speaking words to each and every woman that you love and care about, Lord. Bring us hope today. Answer prayers for us, Lord, and show us how mighty you truly are in the midst of such turmoil, Lord. And so we just leave today's message in your hands, knowing that you can give us exactly what we need. We ask this in your name, amen. So Psalm 130 is a very short chapter, which I was really happy to have a short chapter. And so I forget if it was Joyce who asked me to speak, but I was like, "Well, Lord, what should I speak on?" So I kind of flipped my Bible, and Psalm 130 seemed like a beautiful chapter. So we'll just read that. I think there's six or eight verses. "Out of the depths I cry to you, Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. If you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, so that we can, with reverence, serve you. I wait for the Lord, my whole being waits, and in his word I put my hope. I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning, more than watchmen wait for the morning. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from all their sins." And so I want to tell you about this young lady and how she changed my life. But first, I need to tell you a backstory that led up to when we met Jasmine. My math's so bad off the top of my head. Over 25 years ago. So actually, Kyle's 33 right now, and he was diagnosed with autism when he was about 3.5. And when Kyle was diagnosed with autism, I went on a mission to get a miracle for my son. Nothing mattered but that God gave my son a miracle. And I used all the faith in the world that a mother could muster to get a miracle for her child. I didn't lack faith in any way. I probably had the faith for 10 kids to get healed. And that was my mission in life at the time. And over years of praying and begging and pleading, I finally realized that no miracle was coming. And I fell into very deep, deep bitterness with God over this miracle. And that bitterness went on for a good 25 years. And about 7 or 8 years ago, and that's another whole story that I could just talk about another time, how it all transpired and happened. I finally made my peace with God and accepted that I didn't need miracles to have a relationship with God, to love him, to put my trust and hope in him. And I released the miracle into the heavens and began a brand new relationship with Jesus Christ. And I really feel that is when my true relationship with Jesus Christ started. And it was in an instant that I went from bitterness and sorrow right into hope and joy in a split second, instantaneously, and it changed my life. And then, you know, it's like 7 years later, my son goes to ABK Bible Camp, Osh Bakun, in October of 2016. He comes home, and he's flipping through his phone, showing me some pictures from it, and I see he's got his arm around a girl in the picture. He's only been gone a weekend. How can your arm be around a girl? And so I'm just, like, looking at it, and that's not so much what surprised me was that Ethan had just come out of a painful relationship just a couple months before. And I was really looking forward to him going that weekend and just really God really ministering to his broken heart. And he comes back and I see this picture and I don't say anything to him. I'm just really mad, like really mad. And I just thought, I'm going to pretend I didn't see that picture. And so the next morning I woke up and Devin, my other son, was ready to hop in the shower. And I'm like, Devin, who is this girl in this picture with Ethan? And he goes, oh, Mom, it's Jasmine. He says, she's the sweetest, sweetest girl, but Mom, she has stage 4 cancer. I was like, really? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, but she's a really sweet girl? And he goes, yeah. I was like, okay, I'm okay with this. If she's a really sweet girl and she loves the Lord, that's all right. And so later in the morning, I said to Ethan, tell me about this girl that Devin just told me that you met on the weekend. And his face just lit up, and he's just like, oh, Mom, she's so sweet. I really want to get to know her, da-da-da-da-da. And I said to him, I'm okay with that, Ethan. I'm okay with that. But you know she has stage 4 cancer. You know she's going to die. I just don't want you bitter with God when she dies. If you can promise me that, you have my blessing. And he's like, I won't, Mom. I won't be bitter with God. I promise. He goes, but she's getting a miracle. And I was like, what? He goes, she believes God's going to heal her and give her a miracle. And then I was just like, oh, anxiety just filled me. I was like, no, God, I'm not going here again. I ain't going here. I'm not doing this miracle thing again. Absolutely not. So I was like, well, I'm just going to have to duct tape my mouth then, because it was really important to me that if my sons married girls, that my relationship with them was very strong and healthy. And I didn't want to ruin my relationship with Jasmine. So she came breezing through our door full of talk of miracles and God's healing and how he was going to give her a miracle. And I had to keep my mouth closed when those things were happening and when she was saying those things. And one day she said to me, Cindy, don't you want to believe that Kyle could get a miracle? And I said, Jasmine, I've come to the point where I don't need Kyle to have a miracle anymore. My love for God isn't based on that. I said, I just leave him in God's hands, and if he wants to give him a miracle, that's awesome. And if he doesn't, I'm at peace with that. And so she just kind of thought about it, and they got married. Well, it was just a couple months after they started dating. Ethan dropped to one knee in January. They started dating in October. Dropped to one knee in January. In January, asked her to marry him. Her two best friends, one had already gotten married, the other one was getting married in the same year, and Jasmine thought she would never find anyone to marry her, a girl dying of cancer. And my son would tell you now, he really didn't think about the cancer a whole lot. He just absolutely fell in love with Jasmine, who was just a sweetheart. Our whole family fell deeply in love with her. And so they got married, and in August of 2017, so met in October, following August, they got married. And they went back and forth to Arizona from August to January for her to have treatment, cancer treatment. And she was getting cancer treatment with Gail Katzenbach. And so there was three women, Christy, Gail, and Jasmine, all having treatment together at this clinic that really dealt lots in vitamins, nutrition, everything. And Jasmine did fairly good while she was having the treatment, but her tumors didn't shrink. And she finally, after months of going back and forth, Ethan couldn't always go with her because of his work. He couldn't just take 4 months off and not have an income to support the two of them. So she went back and forth. Her mom joined her a few times, but Charlene and Jason took really good care of Jasmine, Christy, and Gail during that time, and she grew really close to Gail. And then in March, Gail passed away. But before Gail, Christy passed away. And when Gail passed away, Jasmine's faith, just her faith and just her emotions and feelings kind of, you know, they took a real hit. The realization that she could possibly die hit her really hard. And she kind of shut down for a bit, and we didn't quite know how to help her, how to talk to her about it. How do you talk to a girl who's dying of cancer? And her cancer is 100% death rate. Nobody lives through this cancer. Once you're diagnosed with this cancer, stage four, you usually live 8 months, maybe 2 years. Jasmine was diagnosed at age, almost at the age of 17, and she married Ethan when she was 19. She'd already outlived her prognosis by then, and she had refused all chemo because the death rate was 100%, so why go through the chemo and losing hair and being sick? I'll just, you know, accept what happens. So they got married, and sorry, I already said that. So she went to quit the treatments in Arizona, and they were in Sudbury at the time. And Jasmine went through a lot of highs and lows of not feeling well and then getting better. And we would see improvements, and then we'd see her health kind of fall again. Well, then in July, she took a real turn for the worst. And they rushed her to the hospital. She couldn't breathe right. And the doctors released her after giving her medications and different things that might help her breathe a little better, but things weren't looking good. And her mother, Sherry, sorry, that was in June, not July. It was towards the end of the school year. Her mom is a teacher, and so is her dad. And so for her mom to keep taking time off to care for her all the time, you can only have so much time off as a teacher before you're going to lose your job. So I said, I'll come take care of her for a week while Ethan's at work. And so down I went to Sudbury to take care of Jasmine. I thought I was going to come in the door to a girl who looked like she was almost dying, but she had somehow made a real turnaround overnight. And when I came in the door, she was on her feet. The days before, she couldn't even get out of bed. She couldn't breathe right. She had like balls of cancer just filling her lungs. It started in her on her adrenal gland, went to her kidneys, went into her lungs. And so while I was there, we had a lot of really great chats, Jasmine and I, about God and faith and different things. And her mom came over one night and sat down. Sherry doesn't mind me sharing this story with you, just so you know. I'm writing a book on all this, and Sherry already read the original manuscript, so she knows this is part of the story in the book, and she's really good about being honest about how she felt about Jasmine's cancer. Sherry was really the catalyst in a lot of ways to getting Jasmine to believe she was going to get a miracle, and we weren't not allowed to talk about the miracle. It was only about the miracle. And so I not only had to be quiet around Jasmine about this miracle, I also had to be quiet around Sherry about this miracle. I was just, you know, I would just nod and listen and stuff. So I had been praying in the months before that God would prepare Sherry's heart for Jasmine to be passing away. I kind of made it my own self-proclaimed mission. The goal was to help Jasmine accept that she was going to pass away. I felt it was the most loving thing I could do for her. And so I began to pray that God would prepare Sherry's heart. So Sherry came over for a visit, and she's so lovely. Sherry's such a lovely lady. Just a little younger than me. She also has a daughter, Vanjie, who's older than Jasmine. And she came into the house, and she was supposed to arrive, but she was taking a little longer to arrive. And she says, Jasmine, you're never going to believe what happened today. And Jasmine goes, what? She says, Tom and Anita said they have a word for me. And I was like, Oh, great, a word. This is all we need, more of this stuff. Okay. So I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to sit here and zip my lip. And I'm like, what's this word going to be? And so Desmond goes, oh, yeah, Mom, what's the word he had for you? So they're sitting on couches across from each other. I'm in a little love seat here, and they're across from each other. And she says, he told me about when he was young. He had like a disease that was less life-threatening. And his parents were really, really believing for him to get a miracle. But they were pretty sure he was dying. And finally, his parents gave up on the miracle and handed him over to God and said, whatever you want to do with our child is fine with us. We're going to accept it. And he miraculously turned around, and actually he got a miracle, but not in the way his family thought he was going to get. And he's now in his 50s, still living, she says. And Tom really encouraged me to let go of the miracle and to put my faith and hope in God, Jazzy, no matter what happens to you. And sorry, I might get teary-eyed. Jasmine sat across the room, tears just streaming down her face. What I didn't realize was God was starting to prepare her heart for the idea of dying, and she knew that she needed her parents to hop on board and be ready for her to die. And she said, Mom, I really needed you to get to this place. You know, and I feel like I have faded into the background at this point. Like, the two of them don't even know I'm in the room. They're just in such an intimate moment. There was times where I just wanted to crawl under a rock because I felt like I was invading private spaces. And they just had a really beautiful mother-daughter moment. And Jasmine, you know, got off the couch and went to the bathroom. And Sherry's like, oh, Cindy, I don't know why it's taken me so long to get to this point. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I've been trying to get this miracle for so long, and I'm just so tired. And I said, well, looks like God wants you to, you know, just leave that in his hands now and not be concentrating on the miracle. And so after that, Jasmine was fairly good. She became fairly stable. Well, the next day, actually, let me backtrack again. The next day, her doctor, her name was Lisa. She introduced herself as Lisa, which I totally respected. Walked in the door for a home visit with Jasmine. She had an intern with her who was also training to be a doctor. And the two of them were lovely. Sat on the couch again where Sherry had sat. Jasmine across the room. Ethan was supposed to be in on this meeting. This was going to be a talk about what to do when you die meeting kind of thing, eh? And he was planning on being there, and I said, I'm going to go into town and do some shopping. I'm going to leave you two with the doctors. And, well, they were late. They got behind. Ethan was supposed to be at work, and by the time they arrived, he was at work. And Jasmine said, you know, do you want to stay and be in on this meeting? And I was thinking, I don't want to be in on this meeting. But to leave her alone with doctors and have no emotional support would not have been kind. So I was like, sure, Jasmine, I'll stay in on the meeting. So the doctor sat down with her, and she said, Jasmine, the hospital alerted me that you were there at Emerge, and I'm forgetting to show you photos. Sorry. I'm docking here. There's their wedding day. Jasmine was about 110 pounds there when she first had cancer. She was about 130, so she was down 20 pounds there, still looked fairly good, my husband Vance and I and Ethan. And she said, the hospital made it sound like you were dying. I'm really, really surprised that you look so good today in front of me. She says, obviously you're not dying today. She says, did you do anything since yesterday? Like take any drugs, nothing? No, Jasmine says, I haven't done anything. She says, okay, Jasmine, here's what's happened in your test results. A tumor has wrapped around the main artery that goes into your lungs, like to draw in oxygen air, and is squeezing that artery. We could put a stent in to open that up so it can't continue to block off your air, da-da-da-da-da. And Jasmine's just like, yep, okay. And then she said, you go on, I'm going to say this wrong, there's nurses in this room, correct me, dexamethasone, am I saying it right? Yeah? Okay. She put her on dexamethasone, which Jasmine learned to hate. It just gave her so many side effects she didn't like. But it did help a bit with her breathing. And so the doctor recommended she start using an oxygen when she needed it. But she says to her, Jasmine, we need to talk about hospice. You know, home care, where, I know we don't like to have this conversation. Where do you want to be when you pass away? And I'm just like, oh my goodness, another one of those let me just melt into the background. And Jasmine said, I want to be at home when I pass away. And I remember thinking, no, this is not a good idea. Like, she's got cancer in her lungs. What's it going to be like on her deathbed? Are we going to watch her struggle? Or, like, in my mind, that was the scariest option, was for Jasmine to die at home with her parents and Ethan trying to scramble to take care of her, right? Because I really know nothing about cancer at this point and home care and hospice. I know nothing. I just think it all sounds really scary in my mind. And so I thought, okay, I can talk to her about this. Maybe I can convince her later that she needs to go to hospice and not at home. And so anyway, the doctor left. She couldn't believe how well Jasmine was doing. That night, Jasmine said she sat up in the middle of the night and something came over her, and all of a sudden she could just breathe. And she felt like God was telling her, you're going to be okay. Everything's all right. And she told me in the morning exactly that had happened. And I was like, really? And she says, yeah. She says, and I can't believe how well I can breathe today. She went on from there to feel pretty good right through to the following January. And her and Ethan actually moved back to the Sioux and got a house here. Jasmine had a conversation with me just a month before. She says, we need to move to the Sioux. If I pass away, Ethan needs to be near his family. She says, I know my family loves him, but there's nothing like your own family if you lose a spouse. She says, I just really feel we got to move to the Sioux so he has the support he needs. And she was always so unselfish. All the time. She was unselfish. She hardly ever thought of herself and her own needs, Jasmine. And so they moved to the Sioux, and I helped her paint the house for a week. We had a wonderful week together painting the whole house and getting it ready. And there's a picture of her and I in my backyard. I think it was January, her lungs started to act up more and more. And by February, one day, she texts me. She says, Mom, can you go to the pharmacy and get me my drugs? Ethan's at work right now, and I just realized I'm out of pain meds. I'm in pain. Well, I was alone with Kyle, who has severe autism. I couldn't leave him, and I can't get him into a vehicle. So I was like, oh, gosh, I can't get her drugs. I know how bad her pain is if she doesn't have them. And so I messaged Devin, can you go get her her meds? And he's always so helpful, Devin. So off he went to get her meds. He delivered them to her place, and he texted me back. He's like, Mom, she can't even get out of bed. The house is a complete disaster. And I was like, oh, boy. Okay, so when Kyle's staff from CLA came in the house an hour later, I went down to the other end of town, and I went into the house, and I was like, oh, my goodness. They just, like, dishes. And Jasmine keeps a spotless house, and Ethan was fairly neat himself. And so I was like, oh my goodness, okay, why did we not know about this? And so I go around the corner and I go into the bedroom and I'm like, Jasmine. And she goes, hi. And I said, I just wanted to come check on you. I said, how you doing? She says, not good today. And I said, can you walk or anything? She says, I don't think I can today. So here she is. She's in bed. She can't walk today. She doesn't tell any of us, probably didn't even tell Ethan. She was really bad about not wanting anyone to have to take time off work or shut down life or anything. She just wanted to do it all herself without burdening a soul. So helped her get to the bathroom. She hopped back into bed. I'm doing a bunch of stuff in the kitchen. I thought I'll just clean everything up. Ethan worked very long days, so for him to try to do laundry and dishes and food and take care of Jasmine was just too much. And so I was cleaning up, the kitchen and stuff like that, and all of a sudden I thought, oh, I better go check on her. It's been a little while. I haven't seen her text me. I come in, and she's on the floor, and she's just kind of sitting there. I'm like, Jazzy, what you doing? Oh, I can't get up back to the bed. She says, I got out of bed, and I wasn't strong enough to stand, and I can't get back up to the bed. And I was like, you could text me. My phone's up on the bed, and I can't reach it. So imagine, she would have been there till later that night when my son came home from work, and she would have been stuck there. And I said, Jasmine, you can't be alone anymore. Like, you need full-time care now. And she was just kind of like, she really tried to accept each stage of cancer that she got to. And I said, I'll come down each day and I'll take care of you. And she says, you can't. You have Kyle and Vance and food and house. And she says, you can't come take care of me too. I said, yeah, I can do it. I said, well, I'll come down each day and hang out here after I'm done my stuff at home. So for 3-4 weeks, I went down to take care of Jasmine each day. And we just had a really lovely time together. She was in a lot of pain during that time. And she needed a walker now. She needed oxygen. But after 4 weeks, I started to get really worn down. It was wearing me down, running back and forth, taking care of two homes. And I was like, why is she not asking her mom or telling her mom that she's ill? Because she doesn't want to burden anyone. And so I was like, I got to tell her mom. And I was like, betray Jasmine by calling a relative and telling them that she needs help and her feeling like nobody should have called them, or betray her mom by not telling her that her daughter's ill. And I was just like, okay, Lord, what do we do? I thought, I need to call her mom. Her mom would want to know. So I called Sherry and I'm like, Sherry, Jasmine's not doing well. And I've been here for 3 or 4 weeks taking care of her. And I said, you know what? Jazzy loves me, but I know she really wants you. You're who she wants. I know it. And she says, I'll be there tomorrow. And so Sherry packed in life and came to the Sioux for 3 months. And they were in the most micro, small house you could imagine. Vance and I lived in a wartime home for 2 years, which was really tiny, and this house was really small like that. And Sherry stayed for 3 months taking care of Jasmine, like away from her husband, Aaron, and taking care of Jasmine. And after 3 months, towards the end of June, Sherry said, oh, I can't do this anymore. I'm exhausted. She says, Jazzy, you're going to have to either, you know, we're going to have to find something else, or you're going to have to pack it up and come to Sudbury where we can take care of you there, because we just cannot do this away from your dad, me doing this. And so Jasmine understood and Ethan understood, and they all talked about it. But before they made a decision, she decided to do radiation. And she'd put that off for very, very long as she could. And so she did a bit of radiation at the Sioux Area Hospital. That was a new experience. I'd never been in the cancer unit there for anything like that. And the day we went in for her to like learn about radiation, and I'm super nervous about this whole radiation thing, the nurse is telling us all about it, and she's like, okay, we can start next week. She looks down at her book, and she goes, oh, I got an opening today. Jasmine, we can do one today. And Jasmine's like, yep, okay. And I'm like, I'm thinking, no, I'm not ready for this. You might be ready for this, but I'm not ready for this. And then I didn't say anything, and the nurse goes, oh, no, I'm wrong. We can't do today. It'll be next week. I was like, phew, okay. So off we go. We come back the next week, and we're sitting in the waiting room, you know, and Jasmine's just kind of sitting there, and I'm on my phone reading or whatever, and they come and get her, and I'm just a nervous wreck thinking about radiation. She comes out 10 minutes later, okay, let's go. And I was like, you're okay? Okay, because I know nothing about all this stuff, right? She's like, yeah, I'm fine. So we hop in the car. I'm like, did it hurt? Well, no, it's like an x-ray. I was like, oh, I pictured this thing coming out and zapping you with lightning or something. And she's like, no, it's painless. And so she was really good at having humor to do with her cancer. And so then she went with her parents to the camp for the summer, and Ethan traveled back and forth on the weekends to see her, and they had a long distance marriage while her parents took care of her at camp, which was her favorite place on earth to be. And at the end of the summer, Jasmine in the middle of the night coughed up like pools of blood on the floor, and in a panic, of course, they called an ambulance, and it came all the way out 45 minutes from Sudbury to pick her up, brought her into Sudbury. Ethan drove right there pretty much to meet with her at the hospital there. And a couple days later, they flew her to Sault Ste. Marie. Ethan came by car, and then I met them at the hospital. And they told Sherry and Aaron, Mom, Dad, we got this time. Just, you don't have to come. You've done so much already. We can handle this. We got also have the Hensons also to help us. So, you know. So I met them at the hospital, and Jasmine was in the hospital for 5 days, and she didn't eat for 5 days. She threw up constantly. She had diarrhea and stomach pain. It was terrible, and we thought this was the end. Like, after 5 days of no food, at this point, she was probably down about 70 pounds on her 5'7", 5'8" frame. And so we called everyone, her family, everyone, because it didn't look good for Jasmine, and all her family and relatives flew in, came to the hospital. We thought Jasmine, you know, was going to die, and the family gathered around her. They prayed for her, and miraculously, that was a brush with death that she overcame, and she was released from the hospital, went home, and then in September, her and Ethan moved. She was released from the hospital, went home, and then they gave up the house, and they moved in with us, with me and Vance. But we had to really convince Jasmine that this was a good idea, and she was like, "I don't want to burden you guys. Like, you know, you already have the staff and stuff with Kyle and grandkids, and I just don't want to burden everyone by having to take care of me." And we're like, "Jazzy, we want to take care of you, please. We know you and Ethan want to be together. Come stay with us." And so Ethan was so excited, and Jasmine was really excited. She says, "Okay, I'll try it for a week, and how about we agree, if it doesn't feel right or we don't all feel comfortable, I'll go back to my parents, and Ethan will travel on the weekends to see me." And we're like, "Okay." Well, Ethan just, he ran all over the house, just getting everything perfect. Vance and I moved out of our main floor bedroom. Ethan and Jasmine moved in to the main floor bedroom. Everything was set up beautiful for a special needs person. And after the week, she was like, "I want to stay. I really feel welcome here, and I want to stay." And so that was in September. In October, Jasmine came very, very close to dying, and her nurses gave her 5 to 7 days left to live. We had, I'm not a nurse at all, but I learned everything to do with all sorts of things, like tubing and IVs and oxygen and medications and everything you can imagine I learned how to do and how things were to be done. It took me a while to figure out the medications. There was like a bedside table beside her bed that had about, you know, 10 bottles of medications on them. And at this point, Jasmine lived with throwing up and diarrhea every day, throughout the day, almost nonstop, it seemed. And they said that she was going to die. So everyone came. Her family, her friends, they all flew in, drove in from wherever they were, and they all piled into our house. And there was 14 of us for almost 2 weeks, like, in our home. Nurses in and out. Kyle's staff in and out to take care of them. Kyle usually in the middle of his bipolar spell or whatever he was doing. And I was exhausted by this point. That's my daughter, Charity, and her husband, Dan, with Ethan and Jasmine. There's another picture of them. As you can see, Jasmine was very beautiful girl. And, you know, the one thing she loved about being at her house was that it was busy and there was lots of people and she didn't have to be lonely because the kids were at our house all the time. And so that brought her a lot of joy. See the moon face on her right there? That was from the dexamethasone, gave her moon face, which was kind of nice because she was so thin that her face would look really round. But I want it. So she decided to match Alice's hairdo that day. So as you can see, she had gotten really, really thin. She was on the oxygen full time. That's at our house there. Alice was always pulling on her oxygen tubing. Jasmine was probably about 100 pounds there. She was teasing Ethan one day about whether he loved her or not. And I got out my phone. I was always snapping pictures of him. Okay, so I'm going to get you close to what she looked like. This is and that's not even close to how thin she got. So this is her at Christmas time. But let's go back to October. We thought she was going to die. Everyone came in. We spent a whole week praying for her, praying and begging God, "Please, God, don't take her from us." Miraculously, she had another brush with death, and God restored her again. Then in November, it happened again. And again, family came, and again we prayed, and again she got more time. After her November bout, I fell into mourning, and what I call pre-mourning. And I don't know if anyone else has ever went through pre-mourning where you're anticipating someone you love dearly. Like, we loved her dearly. And we were so close to her. My husband, Vance, like, oh, gosh, he was just amazing with Jasmine. Like, him and Jasmine have very similar personalities, so they could just talk for hours about things that I couldn't even wrap my brain around. Jasmine was just a brilliant girl. And he spent a lot of time by her bedside just encouraging her and giving her hope. Ethan also just like encouraging her. But I fell into deep depression in November as I realized Jasmine was dying. And I just couldn't handle the fact that we were losing her. And it just overwhelmed me. A lot of you know I did live video every day, and I hopped on every morning and just put on a smile, did my video. But I felt like such a phony because the morning was so intense. But I wanted to serve the ladies that I ministered to anyways, despite what I was going through. And I knew the right thing was to still teach people to have joy. And at that time, I just didn't have any joy. And fans, he knew I was going through this, but I couldn't reveal it to Jasmine because if she thought for a moment that she was overwhelming me or her situation was overwhelming me, she would have upped and said, I'll go to my parents. I can't do this to Cindy. She always thought of others. So in the mornings, I would talk to Vance about this, you know, depression. I was feeling this sense of hopelessness that we were losing her. And he would say to me, Cindy, we can't live like this. You can't live like this. This is a horrible way to live. You have to live with hope. Yes, she's going to die, but we can't. We can't do that, Cindy. And this went on for a couple months, and I still thought I had to help Jasmine accept that she was dying because her and Sherry were both bouncing between, we're going to get a miracle. Oh, we got to accept this. We're going to get a miracle. We got to accept this. And they both were trying very hard to bounce between between hope and despair. And so about January, one day I was, you know, up in my office where I spend a lot of time in the morning, and I was praying, and I was like, Lord, you know, you can't take her from us. Like, I want her to get a miracle, but I feel so hopeless. She's getting thinner and thinner, and she's dying. And you know sometimes how God speaks to you in a still, quiet voice, and you know it's the Lord speaking to you? I could feel the Lord telling me in my soul, Cindy, you need to stop. You're living as though she's dying, but you need to help her to live. You have to give her hope. I need you to be her biggest hope giver ever. And so I just was like permission for me to come out of mourning and to just step into this angelic place of hope. And just like when Kyle was little and when he was older, I flipped from that despair to hope. Once again, it happened, and it was just a switch. And Vance came up in the morning, and I said, Vance, I've just had a moment with God. And he told me I can't live like this anymore. I have to hope. And he's like, oh, Cindy, I've been praying for you that you'd come out of this depression. And one day, Charity and I, at that time, we could still cross the border. We were going over to Meyer one day and coming back over. And I said to her, I said, Charity, I've been so down and feeling depressed and feeling hopeless. She goes, Mom, I know you have. I can't pull anything on Charity. She's so sensitive to people's emotions. And I said, I thought it was hiding it. She says, well, you probably are from most people, but you haven't been from me. And she said, I was feeling the same way you are. She says, and God had the same talk with me as he had with you, that I have to live with hope. And that day, you know, I walked down those stairs and I faced Jasmine every day with the most beautiful hope and joy. And I did not experience that mourning or that sadness again until she passed away. But we took care of Jasmine from September until March. In March, Jasmine fell really low, like just emotionally. She had such an amazing faith in God. Never did she waver from his goodness, his love, and his mercy. Never. She never wavered from that. And in March, the walls of our home began to close in on her, and she had not been out of the house in so, like, you know, when the pandemic happened and we all went into isolation, well, we had already been isolating for 6 months in our home with Jasmine. I only left to go to church or the grocery store. I went nowhere. When someone in your home is dying, it's really hard to go out and have a great time and go laughing with people. And like Sue knows, she's one of my best friends, and Sue hardly saw me during that time because we hunkered down with Jasmine at home. And so in March, she asked to go back home, to her childhood home, to spend some time. And so Vance and I, now you can imagine, we are going to try, when she told us she needed to go home, like to just get a change of view, Ethan would still travel back and forth. Sherry was there, and Sherry had encouraged her, which we really believe was the right thing to do, to come home for a while. She needed a change. They were at the dinner table across from us, and when Jasmine told us she was going to go home, me and Vance started bawling at the table. Like, we're crying, and we know we need her. Like, she needs to do this. It's the right thing to do. And we're like, Jasmine, just ignore our tears. We're going to miss you. We've been taking care of you, but we want your family to have you now. And so trying to pack her and all her oxygen and everything she needed up to take her there was going to take a lot of work. And then on top of that, we needed good weather. And so the day we planned on taking her early March, we texted Sherry and Erin, and we're like, how's the weather there? And she's like, looks good here. And it was snowy where we are. We were like, what do we do? But Jasmine was feeling good because she has a lot of pain all the time at this point. And we're like, she's has a relief in her pain. We really need to go today. So we packed her up with everything you can imagine. Vance, at this point, she had to be carried anywhere she went. He carried her to the vehicle. Ethan was going to go down the next day. He was going to be done work, so we'd take her down this day. He'd come the next day. And we got her down to her parents' house miraculously, and we didn't think we would. And we laid her in her childhood, in a bed there. Sorry, not her childhood bed. She had a hospital bed similar to this. We laid her in her bed, and we had to say goodbye to her, and we didn't know, is this her last goodbye? She was so thin by then. She was down to about 60 pounds, and it's just a bag of bones. Like, Jasmine got to the point where she almost did not look human anymore, and we said goodbye to her, and we'd gotten in a habit of praying for her every night by her bedside, and we would pray for her before bed every single night, and she said, please pray for me one more time. And so, I kneeled on the floor beside her, and Vance sat on the side of her bed, and we prayed. And I'm just weeping these tears. And we're like, man, are we going to see her again? And then we said her goodbyes, and we drove away. And gosh, we went into Sudbury to stay the night. And it was like this weird release of extreme exhaustion came over me as I just kind of released her over to the care of her family, and because she fell a few times in the night when she tried to get up and help herself find things, and she was just a bag of bones. And when she would fall, we knew she could break bones. I did not sleep for months. I was always listening for her. Ethan was a pretty heavy sleeper in between her microwaving her hot bean bag for her back and food, and she'd get up in the night, and he was exhausted because she'd wake so much in the night. And so he'd sleep when he could. And I got to the point where I wasn't sleeping at night. And that was really affecting me mentally and emotionally because I was worried about her falling. And one night she did fall. I woke up to a loud bang, and I came running up the stairs. And I was like, what was that noise? What was that noise? And I'm looking, and Ethan comes running out of the bedroom. He's like, where's Jasmine? Where's Jasmine? And we're both in a panic. He runs back into the bedroom to check the bathroom. I see her oxygen line going like around the kitchen counter, and it ends over there. And I run over to the counter, and there she is on the ground, 60 pounds of bones with her walker. She had tried to transfer food, and she fell, and she hit her head very hard. And so when we brought her to her parents and we released her to them, I slept. I slept and slept for a week straight. Like, it really was, sleeping a lot. And so Vance and I decided, well, okay, she's with her parents, she's safe, she's good, we're going to book a holiday. And so we booked a holiday, two-week holiday, to go to Florida, go on a cruise. All this pandemic stuff was happening. And I'm like, this will pass over in a few days. Let's just go. And so, of course, it didn't. So we're in Miami. We're only there 5 days, and, we're told to come back home. Back home we get. We'd only had 5 days out of the 14. And we're like, oh, well. And then within a couple of days of being home, we were pretty sure we had COVID. So we back then, they didn't know how long you isolate for. So we isolated for 5 whole weeks. And then finally, we get a call on the phone, and Sherry's like, would you come see Jasmine? She really misses you guys. And we're like, we would love to come. We just weren't sure with all the rules and regulations if you guys would be okay with us coming. We packed it in the next day, and we were down there to see Jasmine. We had 3 or 4 visits with Jasmine in the next few weeks that we got to see her and pray with her and visit with her. Each time we went, she was sleeping more and more. And then Sherry messaged me. She says she's on a morphine pump now. I knew personally when you go on a morphine pump, you usually have 2 weeks left to live after that. I didn't say anything to Sherry about that. because I didn't want to like conflict any decisions they were making, but I knew that that was 2 weeks left. But I still had this hope in me, this beautiful hope that God could still do a miracle. He could do something. And so she went on the morphine pump, and then she was pretty much almost sleeping 24 hours a day. The last time we saw her, we went to see her, and she, her parents went for a walk. We're like, oh, you don't have to go for a walk. You can stay while we visit. No, she really wants to talk to you. And so, of course, Ethan's there full time by this point, around the clock. He's not working anymore. He's just by his wife's side. And she said, Cindy and Vance, I just really feel like something's going to happen, and I just have a little bit of time left. And I'm like, oh, Jasmine, don't give up your hope. You never know. God may do something in the next few days, you know. And I still wasn't feeling like back into mourning or despair. I was just still really being one of her hope givers. And so we said, can we pray for you, Jasmine? And she said, yes. And so we were on either side of her, and we prayed for her, and her hands just came up, and she's just like, Lord, I receive whatever you want to give to me. And that's what she said. And those are the last words we really heard her say. And she said, I am at peace with whatever God wants to do with my life. And we left, and I honestly thought maybe God would come through and give her that miracle. And so we went home, and we got a call. I was on live video, actually. I was on live video to Ethan. We were planning that day to go anyways, to go see her. Again, we tried to go down twice a week if we could arrange people for Kyle to watch him, because the staff wasn't really taking care of Kyle at that point. So Devin would come over. Praise God for Devin, his big heart. And so I'm on live video, and I'm just about done my live video that I did every morning with the ladies, and my screen pops down, and Ethan's like, Jasmine has not woke up this morning. We can't wake her. And I just kind of blinked my eyes really quickly to the ladies and was like, okay, ladies, goodbye. I'll see you tomorrow, you know. And I just raced down the stairs, and I said, Vance, she didn't wake up. We got to go. And so we hopped in the car, and we drove. And we were praying along the way, and I still had this hope that maybe, just maybe, she could still get a miracle in the final hour. And we were about 10, 15 minutes out of Sudbury, and all of a sudden this peace fell over my heart, and I just knew I didn't need to pray no more for Jasmine. I just knew it. For whatever reason it was, I just didn't need to say another prayer. And just a couple seconds later, my phone rang. It said, Ethan. I said, hello? And there was silence and just sniffling. He said, Jasmine just passed away. We were only 10 minutes from Sherry and Aaron's house. And Vance and I had no words. We were just crying all the way. The whole 10 minutes, we couldn't even talk. And we got in the driveway. And you know how in your dreams where you go really, really slow and you just can't, you know, their driveway was long, and I could see Ethan outside the front door just standing there, and I just couldn't get to my son fast enough just to run and embrace him. And him and me and Vance just stood there for the longest time embracing. And during the whole taking care of Jasmine when she was at our home for 6 months, Sherry and Aaron spent a lot of time with us, and Jasmine and Vangie and her two best friends, Emily and Serena, her grandparents, Serge and Tula. We had become her people. We'd become very close with all of them. And we went into the house, and we saw them all crying and hugged them all. And then we went over to Jasmine's bed, and there she was laying there. We got time with her. And we just sat there, and we just held her, and we cried. And she was peaceful. She hadn't woken up that morning, and she had this horrible fear throughout dying that maybe she wouldn't be able to breathe. Her one prayer to God was, please don't let me get to that point. And she didn't get to that point. She went very peacefully on the morphine for the 2 weeks. But the night before, she'd had that rally before she died, and she sat around a table with her whole family, and they had this beautiful dinner, and she was laughing with them. And she texted me before she went to bed. I was the last person she sent a text to. And she said, Cindy, can you bring my boots and my sweater? And so it was really hard for me to make out what she was saying, because she was probably on morphine and was half out of it. And I figured out in her text that she was planning a pizza party for when me and Vance came the next day, and could I bring her boots and a nice sweater so she could put them on for our pizza party. And so Ethan got her phone after she died. He saw my text was the last one she sent out, and she always took pictures of herself in case God gave her a miracle, that she could show people how bad it got and the great miracle that God gave her. And we had her funeral, and Sharon Aaron came afterwards to get her stuff, and we're still in very close contact with Sharon Aaron. And Ethan spent, you know, a good year mourning. He did so well. We were really proud of him. And some of you know he started sharing on TikTok Jasmine's story of faith, and he actually ended up with over 1 million followers. And her story went around the world. People messaged him saying, I was going to take my life, and I heard of Jasmine's hope and her faith, decided I have something to live for. And he would get many stories that he shared with us about that. And he continued to share her story, and I started writing her book, which hopefully will be published this year. And she just constantly was filled with hope and faith and peace, and it was amazing. But I'm wondering where you think, oh, Cindy's telling us this story, but how do we apply this to our own lives? Like, maybe you're not living what Jasmine is living, but right now, you know, even within the last year, some of us began to lose our hope, right? That we would see normal life again, that some of us worried that it was the end times, that, you know, there was all sorts of things we all worried about. And many of us may have even become completely hopeless and felt like none of this could ever turn around. Could we ever see normalcy again? And I don't know if you even have a sick loved one that you're worried about, and you've went into pre-mourning. You've already decided that this is the end and that God can't do anything in this situation. And I can tell you that even though cancer took our dear Jasmine, the devil never got her faith. And that's the miracle. That's the miracle. It's not physical. Healing is not what we should be seeking God for. It's that our faith grows, our faith in him to do whatever he needs to do in our life, even if it means taking our life, that we would give it over to him. And Jasmine taught me that she had come to peace with the fact that God was going to give her some sort of a miracle, whether it was in heaven or it was on earth, and she got her miracle. Jasmine beat cancer. Cancer might have taken her life, but she beat cancer in every other way. After she died, Sherry had to come to grips with the fact that Jasmine didn't get her miracle. And up until the second before Jasmine died, Sherry thought she was going to still get that miracle. And later she told me, months later, she says, I had to live in that place. I couldn't live anywhere else. She says, my mom died of lung cancer. My brother died in a drowning accident just years after that. And then Jazzy, how could God take 3 people from me? She said, I couldn't believe he would do that. I had to live in a place where I believed that he was going to give Jazzy a miracle. She says, and I believe that built Jazzy's faith. And so we had some really great conversations, and she's really been developing her relationship with God since Jasmine passed away. But I hope that Jasmine's story today has blessed your heart, and just how you saw God transformed my heart so amazing from such hopelessness to such hope and faith. And after Jasmine passed away, I did not return to that place of mourning that I had been. I did some mourning, of course, but I had done so much mourning before she died that I didn't have a whole lot left in me left to mourn. And I was able to be such a rock for my family when they were in heavy and deep mourning that in some ways it was a blessing that I could just, we talk openly about Jasmine all the time, but this was her in the October when she almost passed away, and then she had to turn around. We celebrated that she was going to live, and we had a big dinner, and she got, this is her all dressed up, did her makeup, got her hair nice. But now I've got to tell you about this girl. My son has fallen in love again, and her name's Ashley, and he's getting married this summer in July to Ashley. And you know what? Jasmine prayed for that girl, and she was on her deathbed. She prayed for that girl to come into Ethan's life. That's how amazing Jasmine was. And she told us all, Ethan's going to get married again, and I want you all to encourage him and all to love her and accept her. And so on her deathbed, she prayed for Ashley. She didn't know it was Ashley, but she prayed for her. And so this is a beautiful story in so many ways of a young girl who's only 22 when she died, but had the faith of a 90-year-old lady when she passed away. And so I hope today your faith will be built up in God, not to give you miracles, because he can and he might, but don't put your faith there. Just put your life in his hands and ask him to take your life and do what he wants with it. It'll glorify him more than you getting a miracle.